Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. As Epictetus said, nature has given each of us one tongue but two ears, that we may hear from others twice as much as we speak. I read and listen a great deal more than I write or speak. One thing that impresses me forcefully from my reading in the last few years, say since I got out of the gulag, is that there are many more racially conscious white people than the system likes to admit. The internet has given a voice to those whites who have pierced the veil of lies we've been told about race, and there are thousands upon thousands of us speaking out openly now, not only on the comments sections of controlled media news sites, where we often frame the debate and sometimes even dominate, but on innumerable spontaneous groups on social media and on many dedicated blogs, podcasts, and websites. We are probably 100 times more numerous and also 100 times more noble, brave, and intelligent than we are portrayed by the oligarchs' media. And all that is very, very encouraging. But I also see signs of danger. Danger that great efforts will be made, lives dedicated and spent, resources marshaled on a huge scale, sacrifices made that can never be made again, and that it will all be for nothing. No matter how much we love our race, no matter how hard we work and sacrifice, it will all be for nothing if the organizations we found, the parties we create, the institutions we build, carry within them the seeds of racial destruction. Let me give you some examples. The United States Constitution was created by racially conscious white men. It was the founding document of a new society explicitly dedicated to the posterity of the Europeans who wrote it. One of the first laws written in pursuance of that Constitution by its framers and their close associates was a law defining American citizenship in racial terms. But the Constitution failed. It is now, at least nominally, the centerpiece of the most tyrannical and racially destructive institution ever seen on this planet. The intentions of its authors be damned. The framers of the Constitution failed to make its racial provisions as explicit, as primary, and as unshakable and unamendable as they needed to be to prevent the destruction of the people which created it. The Constitution also failed to prevent the loss of our liberty, and it even failed to prevent its own destruction, perversion, and inversion. A few years ago, speaking to a white nationalist audience, I gave another example. Just over 100 years ago, the Democratic Party in the United States was the party of states' rights. The Democratic Party was the party of the white working man. The Democratic Party was the party of racial segregation, racial separation, and racial integrity. But the Democratic Party was not a party of principle, and its leaders were not men of principle. They were men of expediency. They were, by default, a vehicle for real patriots at some points in their history. But their only fundamental principle was doing and saying whatever it takes to get elected. Whatever works was their watchword. And when Franklin Roosevelt swept into power on a wave of Jewish money, Jewish advisors, and a tsunami of vile lies and deceptions, the party of racial separation and the white working man was quickly transformed into the party of affirmative action, unlimited immigration, Jewish supremacism, and diseased sodomites. But they did win a lot of elections. A great success, that. And I am sure that if you had warned the leaders of the Democratic Party in the late 19th century that in a few short decades their party would come to embody nearly the exact opposite of the principles it then upheld, they would have laughed in your face. They would have told you that the party leadership was in good hands and that you could depend on the men who held the reins of power to do what was right. How wrong they were. The Republican Party is no different in its essence. What began as a party of cynical money men and hysterical abolitionist agitators eventually morphed into the implicitly white, quote-unquote conservative party of opposition to Democratic and leftist excesses in the 20th century, and has now morphed again into the party of conservative chicken hawks who worship Jews, corporations, Jews, multiracialism, Jews, Israel, Jews, money, Jews, and Jesus in more or less that order. They are pragmatic men who do whatever they need to do to stay in power. Republicans should rename their party and call it simply the Party of No Principles. Their symbol should be the greasy extended palm. We see a similar phenomenon in the various forms of Christianity. What began as a nonsensical, primitive, raceless, equalitarian religion for slaves rooted in Judaism that transformed and then destroyed the classical civilization created by our race evolved into the de facto vehicle for white European unity, resistance to Islamic invasion, and containment of the Jewish threat for centuries. In the last 150 years or so, it has transformed itself again, in most of its varieties, closer to its equalitarian Jewish roots, and has become one of the driving forces behind mass immigration and miscegenation in the West. One of the things that gives these institutions, the churches, the political parties, their staying power is their adaptability, their ability to remain organized and operational in vastly changed circumstances by, essentially, lying to their old constituencies as they throw principle to the wind and become something very different from, sometimes the exact opposite of, what they were only yesterday in historical time. The political party in a mass democracy is the organized embodiment of immoral, unprincipled power in the service of mammon. The system which breeds such parties all but guarantees their lack of integrity, and human nature does the rest. The churches are equally unprincipled, and their constituencies are equally clueless. Their more or less shared holy book, really a collection of dozens of books, is so full of impossible contradictions, mutually exclusive statements and doctrines, and mystical quasi-poetry, largely stolen or laid on by translators, that one can make almost anything one wants out of it by selectively ignoring whatever doesn't fit in with the line currently being vended to the sheep. So it's no wonder that church doctrines and party platforms evolve more rapidly than fruit flies. The growing white resistance to the tyranny in Washington is replete with organizations. Many of these that are only implicitly white profess democratic principles or an allegiance to the Constitution. Of those that are explicitly white, a large number of them profess to be Christians of one sect or another. There is quite a bit of overlap and quite a bit of sectarian infighting. Will restoring or invoking the Constitution of the United States guarantee or even help achieve the survival of our people? Considering that the Constitution itself allows judges appointed by party politicians to decide what the Constitution really means, I think not. Will making the primary vehicle for our salvation, a vote-seeking political party, best serve the race and guarantee its survival? Considering the massive compromises with the truth and with the enemy that the Jewish-friendly and democracy-friendly nationalist parties in Europe have had to make? I think not. Will taking up the sword of Jesus, as a poster on a popular internet forum once seriously advised me to do, help us to rout our enemies and establish a new order in which our race's survival is the paramount value? Well, there's a lot to be said for basing your actions on timeless, impersonal moral ideals. The Christians, at least the true believing ones as opposed to the cynical types, have it all over the political party hacks in this regard. But still I have my doubts. First, the Christian zealots, racialist and anti-racialist alike, are all convinced that 90% of the other Christians don't have a clue what Jesus really meant. Calvinists, traditionalist Catholics, Orthodox rightists, identity believers, all push doctrines and histories that are mutually exclusive and are at each other's throats when given the chance. Second, the Jesus tales acknowledge that the Christ figure was a Jew, and the religion not only grew out of Jewish traditions and incorporates the pure Jewish hate of the Torah into its Bible, but in some of its iterations comes very close to worshiping the slimy race as literal demigods on earth. This doesn't seem helpful to me, though I wish these racialist Christians well and hope that they radically transform their churches to the point that Christians United for a White Europe has 300 million members and Christians United for Israel has none. But I think the odds of that happening are somewhere between the chances of Abe Foxman's son giving him a natural heir and Bill Cosby being named national spokesman for anything. Add to those issues the words I've read recently from some of those promoting a Christianity-based solution to our race's dilemma. I quote, "My faith is more important to me than my folk and my family combined," close quote. What if this man's pastor or bishop or pope or patriarch decided next Sunday morning that pro-white racial activism was a sin and anti-Semitism the greatest sin of all? Another Christian says, quote, "If Christ is not Lord and the Bible is not true, why should I care if the white race continues to exist? Why would I not just do what feels good and live it up in pleasure like the rest of the anti-white whites are doing?" Close quote. This is a perfect example of a false binary. Since he has been inculcated, possibly since birth, with the idea that there is no virtue and no meaning outside his sect's interpretation of the Bible. He assumes that there are no alternatives except absolute hedonism and his church's version of the stories of Jesus ben Yahweh. Truth be told, our race has produced great men of strength, virtue, attainment, knowledge, leadership, philosophical insight, and morality long before Judaism or Christianity or their writings even existed. And there is another alternative, an alternative discovered by William Luther Pierce. The options are not just empty materialism on the one hand and the Jewish Bible on the other. No. If we reject the fictional and the childish things that primitive desert nomads and our gullible forebears believed, we need not therefore adopt the values of a selfish, pleasure-seeking, spiritually dead materialist. No. There is a morality written in our genes. There is a truth written in the structure of the universe itself, written in the subatomic particles that undergird physical reality, and written in the stars. There is a divinity in the noble faces we see looking back at us across the ages, in the works of Myron, Praxiteles, and Phidias, and in the more modern works of Brecker. And there is the same divinity in the faces we see every day, bright diamonds living now amidst the dirt and the mud of our degraded world. We see them every day in our homes and in our classrooms and on the streets of our cities. And there is God, too. Not a deal-making, world-denying Hebrew God existing only on rotting Hebrew scrolls and in rotten Hebrew minds, but a real God whose existence is coterminous with the universe itself and whose awakening from unconsciousness we ourselves are, and whose ultimate manifestation depends, absolutely, totally, and utterly depends upon what we do now. This morality, this truth, this divinity, and this God are not dependent on revelations made to ancient Jews, but are manifest to every man and woman of our race who objectively looks at the evolution of matter, of life, and of consciousness in this universe, and sees that our race is at a threshold which is just as significant as the threshold reached when the first self-replicating molecule evolved from the chaos of matter on the young Earth, the threshold of conscious evolution, of intelligently directed evolution toward higher man and ever higher consciousness. And the awakened ones who see this truth are now coming together to build a community which will become a new order, and a new order which will become a new people. And that community is the National Alliance. By accepting this truth, our new community makes the upward evolution of our kind, which necessarily entails our survival and our separation from other races, the very basis of morality and the sacred, unchangeable purpose of the new society we are forming. The leaders of this new society will be like members of a holy order, not glad-handing shapeshifters trying to curry public favor. This truth gives us power. This truth gives us purpose. And this truth gives us permanence. by giving God back to our folk. A God, I must add, not tied in any way to Jews, and in fact a God opposed in every way to the suicidal devolutionary path the Jews have forced upon us. We give our folk, and in particular our most advanced thinkers, who have been the most alienated from religion up till now, a power and a weapon of inestimable power in securing the existence of our people and a future for white children. And unlike the Hebrew scriptures, our truth and our God are not based on the easily reinterpreted words and primitive maunderings of lower men. The real words of God are to be found in the truths of mathematics, physics, and genetics. They are words that cannot be faked, nor can the cause of upward evolution, which only happens through racial differentiation and separation, be perverted into an anti-racial devolutionary creed, as Christianity has. Our truth is the truth toward which our greatest minds have been reaching ever since our race emerged from the Ice Ages millennia ago. Our cause is the cause compared to which nothing else matters. The real creed of God is the creed of upward evolution. The very universe is imbued with it. As Epictetus said, "Dare to look up to God and say, make use of me for the future as thou wilt. I am of the same mind. I am one with thee. I refuse nothing which seems good to thee." Join us today and make our cause yours also. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. You can join and support us by visiting natall.com. That's natall.com. Or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of truth to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have. Yeah.